down the railroad track. It makes me feel so doggone blue to listen to that old smokestack. Drivers are rolling on, leaving me here behind. Give me back them good old days and let me ramble down the line. To hear the whistle blow, she's taking the sun and leaving the rain and making me want to go.
This is Dave Monk, Prairie Monk, WEFT Champagne, 90.1 FM.
On your FM dial, that's right. And this is Dave on the board. Today is October the 27th, Sunday, of course, 2019. And this is the Prairie Monk Show, which is WEFT's weekly look at rails, trails, greenways, conservation, and whatever else Dave has been up to for this week.
I'd like to settle on two items this week. First of all, is a Folk and Roots Festival in Havana, and David has been at that and teaching harmonicas, and I'll get him to say something about that. Then the Grand Prairie Friends is a 35-year celebration coming up on November 15, and we honour those two things. So Dave, tell me a little bit about the Folk and Roots Festival. It's one festival that's stayed in Havana. Some of the festivals have come across to Champaign.
That's a good point, yes. The Blues, Brews, and Barbecue got started on the streets of Urbana, moved to the parking lot over at Lincoln Square, and then jumped ship to the big parking lot over by the News Gazette over in downtown Champaign. And but yes, as you say, the Folk and Roots Festival, even though it's called the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival, has always taken over several great buildings downtown, including last year. I don't know what kind of church it is, but there's a beautiful, beautiful church right on Race Street, just south of Green. And last year they used that for one of their spaces. So this was the 11th year for it, and I'm kind of a forward person and a modest at best harmonica player. But I happened to know one of the coordinators that first year of the Folk and Roots Festival, and I said, listen, I know enough about the harmonica that I can put me wherever you want. I'll sit someplace and teach people just the most rudimentary things about playing the harmonica. All you have to do is give me the harmonicas. So the first year, they splurged and gave me 10 harmonicas, and by this year, we were up to 20, and in fact, I actually only had 16 this year, gave away all 16, which is probably about a record, so I was pretty happy to have that kind of a turnout, and I won't take much time, because this is not a music program, but yes, basically, you take a bunch of complete neophytes, who, in many cases, had never held a harmonica before, and you walk them from we must have spent 20 minutes learning to play Itsy Bitsy Spider, because again, these people had never held a harmonica, let alone played single notes on the harmonica, and that got us through the first hour playing Itsy Bitsy Spider and Oh Susanna and other very simple children's type songs, because as I've told the class, children's music is intentionally very simple. You don't put sharps and flats in there because these are children, and the 10-hole harmonica is designed around the same principle. If you have a 10-hole harmonica in the key of C, it's like having three octaves from a piano no black keys. All you've got are going up the piano on the white keys. Doesn't get much more simple than that. Really cuts down the chances that you're going to play a wrong note. And by the second hour, we were working our way into a little bit of the blues, going just, well, we'll do this really simple little, like this. Pardon smacking into the microphone. There's generally no microphone there to smack your fingers into. So that's what I got to do for 2 hours.
We also usually have some more sophisticated harmonica players. Did you have some?
This year we didn't. There was a guy who actually owns quite a few harmonicas. A couple of guys were there who had played harmonica before but had never... They were the way I was in the mid-90s, just sitting down with a harmonica and first starting to figure out what to do with it. So in my 2 hours, I got to introduce them to a completely different technique for playing single notes. It's the weirdest idea. I won't bore you with it. But I swear it's the best way to play one note at a time instead of the way you're picturing, which is purse your lips like you're playing, like you're drinking through a straw. And it's honest, I'm kind of a solitary. Give me a book and I'll figure something out. But my best way for learning how to play the harmonica wasn't to go take lessons. It was literally sitting on the roof of the house where I rented the top floor and just tootling away and disturbing squirrels probably in the trees around me. And then listening to CDs and learning to steal the riffs from the harmonica players on the albums. So basically I said, yeah, I can't teach you any more than what you're going to get in these 2 hours. Beyond this, you're on your own. I recommend.
Folk music that is often brings local people together.
Our very own Kevin Elliott was there. He played a free workshop.
We hope that someday we'll have some venues that are large enough to keep conference-style sized music or other festivals together. At the moment, the university has a facility which is well used, but two cities like to have their own character, and that means that they really do need conference-style sized buildings. And Champaign is looking at that, and perhaps Urbana will be looking at that too.
For the longest time, the city of Urbana has been talking about doing something with the old really nice hotel that's right there down in downtown Champaign. It's changed hands a couple of times now. And you know what? I'm blanking on what we used to call it. It was the
Lincoln Lodge Motel. But,
thank you, Jumer's Castle Lodge. The city has got a written agreement that large chain, I believe, is going to come in and turn it into a boutique hotel, which means they're not going to tear down that nice old building. They're going to go in, completely renovate the insides, and among other things, it will have a conference space. They also want it to have like a restaurant on top of that, so they're going to do some sizable stuff with that space. All it is on paper so far. I don't believe this hotel chain has spent any money, dropped $1 million or whatever as proof that they're put the money where your mouth is, right? So, but it's supposedly on the way.
Well, I'd like to say congratulations to the Grand Prairie Friends for the 35th anniversary. We've had a lot to do with Grand Prairie Friends, mainly with the initiation after working with agronomy and school science curriculum project and life sciences, especially botany and zoology. I was very aware that there was a need for more natural history education. We work with the Office of Instructional Resources at the University of Illinois, and the Curriculum Lab, Environmental Studies, and a number of other departments to facilitate us. We created an organization called Natural Areas Instructional Development, And that provided service to perhaps as many as 20 different departments. It might be a slide here or a series there, or actually being a party to lecture discussions where we might be the advocate. Curriculum Lab gave us space, and we created the Natural Areas Instructional Development Organization. Then, after a while, we'd done that for probably about 3 years. We had an inspiration from the Rockefeller Foundation. They were to give a couple of universities about $3 million to do work in environmental education. And we were chosen as a likely target to present for that organization. Rockefeller Foundation said, you have good research and good teaching, but where is your extension that goes to the general public? So shortly I had about 8 heads of department and administrators in my office, and we created educational resources in environmental science. And that did something the same as we had always been doing with natural areas instructional development, but it had a sounding of being more general, and that really being facilitated. We didn't get the grant, but we still ran on a revolving account out of the Curriculum Lab, and we did service work not only with the university but with the community. We were dependent on contingency money, which is the money that comes to the university for staff and faculty to make proposals for different ideas that they have. Contingency money was running out, so we then had to be fairly frugal with a new name. We moved eventually to Champaign in a dead central business district where most of the businesses had moved to the malls, which were popular at that time. And we occupied 4 spaces. Or we didn't occupy all, and we occupied 2 100-foot storefronts. And we worked to see if we could get other nonprofits in. Mark Rubel took one of the spaces, and Weft took another. And we approached the Kresge Foundation to see if we could have 4 not-for-profit or related organizations on Market Street. They liked the idea, but said we didn't have contingency money, like if we were to bottom up, we didn't have other buildings, other resources to back us up. But we remained. We still occupy one of those spaces, and WEFT has established themselves. Rubel has gone off to Nashville, but there's a recording studio there in his place. And next door we have a gaming organization. So it's fairly a nice group of 4 storefronts and a restaurant, the Seven Saints is just down the road. And across the road is the poor tap new bar, which is doing very well, as they took over a pocket prairie we had there. But that's okay, this is gentrification, and people are coming back from the mall, and huge buildings are going up. So it's a different era, we're working with it. When the railroads started to close out in the 80s, we had the temerity to buy 33 mile of railroad bed in the Monticello area. It's between Monticello and Cisco toward Decatur, between Monticello and Champaign, and between White Heath and Clinton, 23 miles. The Railroad Museum bought 7 miles of line and kept the active line together, and that's become the Monticello Railroad Museum, and a very successful museum it is, and it's a national level museum. We called our purchase Heartland Pathways. It didn't rate for support from the Rails to Trails movement because it was in three different sites and they weren't contiguous. So it didn't look as if this could be a rail to trail organization that could come back to rail if necessary. So we still struggle with that. At about the same, we bought the railroad bed mainly because that's the only place where there's any prairie left. The railroad laws prevented invasion of railroad right-of-way, which is usually about 100 feet wide, with a ballast in the middle and prairie on either side. The railroad also used to burn the prairie every once in a while, and it was prairie. Champaign County was about 94% prairie. But the burning would aid the prairie. The burning for years had ignited the litter around the plants and encouraged a population of prairie plants that could handle and enjoy and be dependent on burning. The Indian population that was around was also familiar with the advantages of burning. One, they could make an encirclement with an opening so that the wildlife would come out and the animals could be captured at the entrance. They also just would generally burn because it was realized that the plants and animals did better when burned. So Heartland Pathways has some trails on it. A very nice one at Monticello, paid for by the city of Monticello, but it's rather popular because it parallels Bridge Street, which comes directly off the Cloverleaf on I-27, I-72. And so being parallel, rather than have bikers and hikers walking on Bridge Road, it allows traffic to go from Monticello, Old Town Monticello, to more recent subdivisions. There was 1 mile, went over this Sangamon River with a Sangamon Bridge, Truss Bridge. Heartland Pathways owns it, and the city of Monticello has an easement on that corridor. It's not a super wide easement. It's narrow enough that you can see the vegetation on either side. And at that point, it's bottomland vegetation. So it's trees in a natural place where trees could get enough drainage. There's a mixture of the Sangamon River running to the west and a morainic material, which was sometimes the rivers cut through or they go around, and that provides the drainage that trees would like. So you have big groves here and there. Most of our Heartland Pathways is in Piatt and DeWitt and a little bit in Champaign County. And at about the same time, we ran a rather first prairie conference at Mahomet, and that inspired quite a lot of interest. And one of the interests was, can we acquire more? And to answer that question, I and others surveyed local railroad beds that were coming out. One was the pumpkin vine, usually referred to as the pumpkin vine, because it waddled across the country from Leroy to Lafayette, Indiana. And eventually we crossed roads and then walked in on most of that corridor. We needed something near to Champaign, near to the university, so we selected 1 mile in the Gifford area. Gifford area, yes, just east of Rantoul. It had good prairie on it, not the world's best. It was adjacent to farmland, and the farmers were really wanting it back. So that inspired the creation of the Grand Prairie Friends. It was initiated out of educational resources in environmental science. But we were looking for an organization that would speak for prairie, and that the Grand Prairie Friends has done, and it's done it very well, and we applaud their celebration on the 15th. Wendy Garrison was one of the early people there, and she and her husband helped to pay for that 1 mile. And just recently, two Saturdays ago, I think, Grand Prairie Friends was picking seed there. The Grand Prairie Friends has worked with Loder Cemetery, where a reserve acreage for reserve graves had never been used, but it was original prairie. And with the help of the state, that the cemetery was provided with other space, and the prairie has been a wonderful preservation of a piece of Illinois nature, which happens to be down to about 0.01% of the prairie that was here. 2/3 of the state was prairie, and we have not formally preserved a lot of it. So what the Grand Prairie Friends has helped serve is essential. They bought 9 acres around this cemetery area as a buffer zone, and that has taken on seed picked from the likely places on the railroad line or from the remnant prairie itself. And after about, I would guess, about 8 years, that 9 acres is doing very well. It's interesting that when you are on the 9 acres that had been farmed and step onto the reserve prairie, there's a gap of about 12 inches, and that's an indication of how rapidly the soil can be eroded in a matter of 100 years. and it's sort of a little bit dramatic. Other people have been interested in the prairie at Rankin, and the state tried to put a grass prairie around that as a buffer, but it started to be invasive enough with native species that the native species were moving into the cemetery, which was a remnant prairie. So then moves were made to have a prairie that was more broadleaves than the grasses and not tending to be so invasive. The third little cemetery locally was Prospect Cemetery. And then there's 10 mile of very wide roadside right-of-way between Paxton and Rantoul. That is totally undeveloped. It goes across two moraines, but it has original soil, and it has original species, and it has moisture gradient. So it runs, when you had glaciation, it would dribble melting water out onto outwash plains that in Flatville were drained for agriculture. But in this location, we do have poor drainage, and a good example of what the area was like 100 years ago. So Grand Prairie Friends has also got plots at other places, at St. Joe, and they also have worked the short line prairie, which I spoke of, at Gifford, and they've also gone to Coles County, where there is bottomland forest and forest along the Umbra River, but there are also plots of land that were fingers of prairie in their day, but have been retired from farming, and the Grand Prairie Friends has been reconstructing the prairies there. We lost a 30-odd mile prairie in the Paris to Decatur area, Penn Central, partially because farmers wanted to buy it, and they didn't realize that the genetics on that corridor is important to their own industry. By 1930s, we didn't have soybeans. We had to collect genetic material on those sorts of sites. Unfortunately, when people look at a corridor like that, they are looking for recreation rather than preservation. And 11 plots had been bought by local farmers, and it was felt that they had more right to a few more rows of corn and soybeans than to have a trail. And the trail was not being encouraged by Amish people who were nearby. They didn't mind the use of the trail for prairie purposes, but for recreational purposes, they were not so sure, even though they could have used the corridor themselves. So we lost that one, and this year, some of that farming is going back to occupy the railroad. We actually are benefiting because there are bridges on that railroad, and one of those bridges may come to a rerail that we're doing between Whiteheath and Seymour, so that we can get historic trains from the Railroad Museum on contiguous traffic into Champaign. There's an element of about 8 miles between Seymour and Bonneville and Staley and Champaign, which is currently abandoned, but the track is still there, and we hope that our 4 miles of rail, will allow the movement of historic trains. So one of those bridges from the area in Paris, Hinesboro, Arcola, Arthur, Lovington, and Decatur will be coming our way. And we have a lot of work to do to make that possible, to put a bridge over the Camp Creek, which runs through our 4 miles and does not have a bridge. One of the problems with bridges mostly is that they're removed by mandate, for federal government mandate, because a bridge that is high will allow people to commit suicide if it's high enough. So bridges are removed, and the bridge that was at Camp Creek was virtually a new bridge, but it was removed, so we need to replace it. More recently, the federal government got disenchanted by the fact that too many railroads were being abandoned, to the point that you didn't have free movement of military across the country, and also many of these short lines had potential in perhaps 100 to 200 years. And if you were going to buy back new land for a railroad line, then it would not be possible. So the federal government looked around and saw that hikers and bikers were buying these railroad beds. They had a few difficulties. One was that there are a lot of different titles, and some titles allow people to reclaim their railroad space if it closes out. So the federal government decided to quiet those titles. They would have one more public use, and it would be for hiking and biking. So the titles weren't in trouble. And they also said that if you make this move fast enough, we will not remove the bridges. So Heartland Pathways, having had an experience of buying 30 miles, looked this over. That we had years of introspection about the corridor between Danville and Urbana, and we realized that at one end of it there's mining and strip mines and pools, and some of the early ecologists, Kendi and Shelford and Vessel, were doing studies in the Danville area, especially if you had a 75-year-old pond and a 60-year-old pond and a 40-year-old pond. You could study the way that organisms could come back into action. So even though you don't see the geology of Vermilion County, it's rather interesting. And if you go down into a mine, you can see the carboniferous ecology. If you bring it up and let it oxidize, it doesn't last very long, but it's down there. And it means that in some places there was a fault. And one piece of the land went up and one perhaps went down and left a area where carboniferous plants could grow. And then when other epochs of geology came along, the area was covered over with glacial till and things like that. So you don't see the underneath geology, but it's there. Having worked with this for quite some time, Heartland Pathways got into answering the more modern federal dictate was, which was to create an interim trail use. And in order to save the land, it was realized that if they were going to buy this back in 100 years' time, if a factory went along in Danville and you wanted to get trains out to Champaign, it wasn't going to be easy. There's going to be a lot of protests about creating a new railroad, or it was going to cost a lot. So in the case of the railroad bed between Urbana and Danville, we took out a interim trail use agreement, and that was destined to give the community $12 million, which is being used to create a trail on the old railroad bed. It has more effect in recreation than it does in preservation. So the trail is wide, and the users are very pleased. The conservation people looking for the prairie on either side are a little disappointed, but that's part of the compromise of working with major federal and state dictates. The ADA, American Disabilities Association, has wheelchairs that use the area, and interestingly, they are now asking if they could have battery charges at certain places. Not an easy or not a costless thing to do, but it indicates that the trail is being used. It's viable in terms of economics. The restaurant at the end of the trail is doing quite well with people who ride the first 7 miles. We would like to have a slightly narrower trail between St. Joe and Oakwood, in order to preserve the prairie. In order to do that, we may have to argue at the Forest Preserve level, the Vermilion County Conservation District level, and at the state level, and even the federal level. The federal people don't mind what use is made, just so long as it doesn't, the contiguity of the corridor is not destroyed. So there are two areas that have been developed already. One is between Urbana and St. Joe, 7 miles, and a little piece through the urban part of St. Joe. And then there's a piece between in the Oakwood area. The next one will be a tall bridge. The relationship, this was initiated by Heartland Pathways. CCDC, a conservation group, got very interested and excited about that line and decided to take over the funding of the, you had to buy the railroad. You had to buy the bed. It wasn't very expensive, but it was there. It's partly to give some veracity to the local community's involvement. Were they going to do that? Well, unfortunately, that was, the purchase was not made, and the area sat for 20 years, and using the same docket 20 years later, and using the same recreational zeal, the area has been created and will be permanent. There will be plantings along the corridor. There are some little pieces of remnant here and there, and the forest reserves and conservation districts have been burning some of the area, which is rather important. Back to the Grand Prairie Friends. they have been involved in some of these sorts of things. They haven't had a big involvement in the Kickapoo Trail to Danville, but they're in the background, and all these interested bodies overlap in a very interesting and friendly way. And we're hoping that they will be involved in perpetuity with that line and with the probably about 15 mile between St. Joe and Oakwood. That means we have to talk to the state, talk to the federal government, talk to the recreational people, and hope that we will preserve some of that native material. So the Grand Prairie Friends is still in there, and we're very interested in not only that area, but in a railroad bed come roadbed between Rantoul and Paxton. And that is in full discussion at the moment. We would like to still have Grand Prairie Friends as advocates for Prairie. That doesn't mean they have to be totally involved, but they're well established. They have over 1,000 acres of land, and they have people on committees, and Prairie State Conservation Coalition, and they've become a respected trust. So we look for the continuing activities of the Grand Prairie Friends. And they're there. They actually rent some of that line, and it has very good prairie on it. In the middle of this corridor, if you take tourists off at Kankakee and let them back on at Rantoul, it includes not only this corridor, but it includes a very healthy high school retirement, Royer High School, designed by Royer, and rather interesting. And if you want to look at the corridor going north and south, then this becomes an icon in the middle. There are a bunch of other things that have been happening over the years. The Banner Park District put in a Meadowbrook Park with a prairie, and it's very accessible and has a wide trail. And in there is the Barnhart family. The Barnhart family has a prairie at the end of Race Street, and they were hoping to get 100 acres of prairie. Might even be 400 acres of prairie. So in the days when railroads were coming out and we were losing prairies, Donald Barnhart had been on a high school visit to one of our prairies, which we subsequently lost at Hillcrest on the way south on Neal Street. We had a little plot on the Champlain Moraine where we could demonstrate there'd been a gravel pit there. You could demonstrate the nature of glacial till, and we had a trail. Eventually we lost that to development. But we took many of the plants to Lake Park. And at that time, Donald had grown older, and he was aware that his family farm, where both mother and father were of family backgrounds, but also were academics. And the whole family has been very involved in academics. So Donald especially wanted to have a set aside. There was their homestead and their buildings on the ridge of Yankee Ridge Moraine, and it drains into the Ombra. The backside of it drains more to the Salt Fork. But Donald was aware that they could have a set-aside with the soil and water conservation people to preserve the erosion that was occurring, that does occur on such sites that have slope. So we got together and we bought an acre and a half of mixed prairie seed from there were people in the Oregon area that were growing prairies, very diverse prairies in the backyard, they provided us with seed, and Donald farm people had tractors to prepare it, and it now, after probably 20 years, is a very healthy prairie with a lot of broadleaves, not too many grasses. Donald also took plants from a Route 45 that was being widened, and he can take things like cordgrass with clones, and so he set up plots, and his father was very willing to help. We helped him some by planting evening primrose around the edge, which grows quickly and is very easy to observe. So Father would know where the prairie seed was planted. And you have to have a lot of patience if you're a farmer. It doesn't grow in one season. Some plants will, but most of them. It will be 10, 15, 20 years before the prairie starts to really express itself. And in the process, you'll have weeds, and it's very tempting to mow the weeds down. And in actual fact, we can use that as a control mechanism sometimes. Once again, this is the sort of place where the soil and water conservation comes into action. The university has bought 8 square miles of land in that area. That includes the Barnhart family farm, but they've guaranteed to keep the prairie. So some of the first plantings we planted in strips. We put in the grasses. They grow reasonably easily. And that ran two plots with several acres in each, like big blue stem, little blue stem, switchgrass and Indian grass, and some of the broadleaves. So those plots still grow. And Father was very helpful in that he would put together, he would adopt his harvest equipment so that the drums would handle the seed coming off those plots. It's not easy to harvest seed from a prairie. You have many, many broadleaves and grasses together, and they come to head at different times. Well, the Grand Prairie Friends is working with the family. The family has taken a big farm shed and is creating a restaurant there that looks over Savoy. And the celebrations will be at that location by invitation rather than by anything else, so that people who've been involved or want to be involved have been invited. And Wendy Garrison will come back because she's been continuing to help with Grand Prairie Friends, even though she doesn't live in this area anymore. And she will visit some of these areas we're talking about. And we're talking to the Department of Transportation. You've heard our diatribes on the land next to Route 45 at Savoy. And we're also talking to tourism to see if we couldn't have a north-south trail. And all around, we congratulate the Grand Prairie Friends who've done all the work of making it a successful experience. We couldn't have done that. That's why we sort of created in the first place. If we use educational resources in environmental science with broad environmental interests, we needed to spin off the Grand Prairie Friends and the Natural Area Study Group, two groups that are still going 35 years later. So we've been pleased with our initial involvement in that and in the Heartland Pathways and in the other subsidiary organizations that we work with over the years. And so we're very pleased, and I like the interaction that continues. CCDC, Champaign County Design and Conservation Foundation, is supportive and has been involved in fundraising. And on the following day to the celebration, so this is 15th and 16th of November, there will be a meeting at Sleepy Creek in Vermilion County as a supporter for continuing work with the Kickapoo Trail. So we're applauding these activities. So I just am pleased with progress that's been made. It has taken in 50 years a lot of work by a lot of people, and often people from Natural History Survey and other agencies that know much better about prairie than we. But we've done some of the rough, tough end of things. And just as a close out, I would like to say thank you to Al Fredericks, who is helping us to put a refrigerator upstairs in the next door building. And that, if you know our office next to where it looks like a antique store, and it's very hard to do that. So thanks to Al and other people who are helping, and we have to do that. So we're nearly at the end here. I encourage you to work with the Grand Prairie Friends. They do have enough get up and go to have a 150 volunteers come to a day to plant trees. They're doing it, and it's just wonderful to see that happening. So think of the Grand Prairie Friends, think of the Forest Preserve, which owns the Kickapoo State Rail Trail, and Vermilion County, which is at the other end with the Vermilion County Conservation District. And these are all boards that work with the like of Audubon and plant preservation agencies that make for your heritage, which is prairie. And this is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board. As always, the views and opinions expressed are solely those of the speakers and no one else. It's now noon. It's time for